again, everybody. I'm Dan Hoard, and this is the Bengals Booth Podcast, the picky, picky, picky edition, as we begin looking ahead to next week's NFL draft, and more specifically, the Bengals' biggest needs and some of the players they are likely to consider with the 21st overall pick. This is the first of two draft preview podcasts I will do with my broadcast partner, Dave Lapham. And in the interest of full disclosure, Lap will make his prediction for who the Bengals will take in the next podcast closer to draft day. In fact, in that podcast, we'll both predict who the Bengals will take, we'll tell you who each of us would take, and we'll give you a dream pick for a guy that isn't expected to be there at number 21, but would be a slam dunk if he's still on the board. Lap will join me for our first draft discussion momentarily, but first, here's a quick reminder that you can have the latest edition of this podcast delivered right to your phone, tablet, or computer by subscribing on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play. It's the greatest invention since the golf rangefinder. Isn't it awesome not to have to stomp around near your ball looking for a plate with the distances listed? It hasn't helped my game. I'm as lousy as ever. But it's certainly cool to know the exact distance to the flag at the touch of a button or a glance at your watch. All right, time for the first of two draft previews with my broadcast partner, Dave Lapham. Lap, let's start with the trade for Cordy Glenn and how that impacts the Bengals draft. They moved down from having the 12th pick to the 21st pick and picked up their starting left tackle in that deal.
And in so doing, didn't lose any draft picks. All they did was change positions, but they retained all 11 of their choices. And they got a guy who has proven in the National Football League that he is an upper crust talent. He's not just a guy. He's a damn good football player. So if not their biggest need, one of their needs in everybody's estimation, you don't have to be a football Einstein, is a left tackle. And honestly, in this draft, there's maybe a couple. So do you roll the dice on either one of them being there? And even if you do take one of them, will they be as good a player as Cordy Glenn? If you want to draft that left tackle position. Now, you could still draft a tackle and have them get in the mix at right tackle, but you have a left tackle, so that took one of the immediate needs right off the board, the left tackle position. Now, I'm not saying you don't still address tackle as a position, interior offensive line, you know, as a need position, but to be able to get that type of talent in a trade where that's one of your biggest needs and you don't have to go on a 50-50 crapshoot. You know, the only thing that you're concerned about maybe is, you know, is there any residual effects from the bone spur that he had in his ankle? I don't think so. I mean, tons of guys have played, you know, after having that. That's not a major procedure. That's not a structural procedure. So this guy's a beast. I mean, that's Man Mountain Dean. That's like trying to get around a condo when he sets up a left tackle. And I think they get themselves a heck of a deal there.
He's the starting left tackle now, at least on paper. I guess Jake Fisher is number one on the depth chart at right tackle. Bobby Hart, free agent they signed from the Giants, probably number two at right tackle. But to me, as much as I like Jake Fisher, he hasn't proven himself as a standout NFL right tackle. Could they still go tackle at 21?
I think they could. I think it's a possibility. You know, and honestly, there's an old theory, and I know Paul Brown believed this, and I think Mike Brown believes this, although Paul Brown did believe in centers. His first pick ever in franchise history was a center because, Dan, two guys handled the ball every single play, center and a quarterback. And I remember when I had to play center when Blair Bush had a knee injury, Paul Brown said to me exactly that. There's only two people that handle the ball every snap. Don't screw up any snaps. Yes, sir. Now, in today's football, the Wildcat quarterback might not take every snap. The only guy that handles the ball every single play is a center. So how important is that position? Not only that, he makes all the calls, all those kind of things. But with that said, there's so much value to get tackles. Because, and in my opinion, Dan, it's not just the left tackle anymore. In the last couple of Super Bowls, Von Miller did all his damage pass rushing the right tackle. The big play that was made in the last Super Bowl, when the New England Patriots, Tom Brady gets separated from football, came from the Philadelphia Eagles off the right side, off that right tackle, their left defensive side. You have to have pass protectors everywhere. So the old theory of can never have enough tackles. You can always move tackles inside. Very much easier for a tackle to move into guard or center than a guard or a center to move out to tackle normally. I found that to be the case, having experience at all five spots. from a pass protection standpoint, there is no question tackle is much more difficult in terms of technique and all the things that you have to be aware of, pass protection outside.
The best offensive lineman in this draft is Quentin Nelson, guard from Notre Dame. He's not going to be around at number 21. Right. I can guarantee that. A couple of tackles whose names I have written down, Mike McClinchy, also from Notre Dame, Colton Miller from UCLA. Is there a shot that those guys are going to be there at 21?
I think one of them might. One of them might. And if that's the case, I think McClinchy might be the one that goes. But, you know, they might both be there. Dan, you never know. In this draft, you have five quarterbacks, maybe six. If six quarterbacks go in the top 20, and then there are five or six can't-miss prospects, now you got a dozen people off the board, and somebody's going to slide. Some people are going to slide. Who is it that's going to slide to 21? It might be one of the tackles. It might be a defensive tackle. It might be a linebacker. It could be anywhere. And at that point, the Bengals, I think, would say, well, we don't necessarily have as big a need at this position, but we never expected this guy who we had rated on our board, number 14, and he's there at 21. Now, everybody's board is different because, let's face it, Dan, boards are set on need and scheme. So everybody's board is different. I mean, you may have a fan in, you know, Detroit saying, why the hell would the Bengals make that selection and vice versa? But you have to be true to your own board. You can't be true to Mel Kiper's board or Todd McShay's board or any of those crazy boards because they're not basing it necessarily on the organization's need plus scheme and dynamic of scheme. You got to make sure that you draft somebody that fits what you do, not what they think of this guy as a football player in general.
Let's talk about need. The most obvious need is center. T.J. Johnson has played a little bit in the regular season. He is the one true center on the roster. Trey Hopkins has done it in the preseason and at practice, but he's never played center in a regular season game. There are three centers that have first-round grades in this year's draft. So this is a case where skill level and need seem to be matching up, if not in the first round at some point for the Bengals. Bill Price from Ohio State. James Daniels from Iowa, Frank Ragnow from Arkansas, all centers with first-round grades.
And, you know, Mason Cole is not a first-round grade from Michigan as a center, but he played left tackle. He's got 38 starts at left tackle, 13 at center, 51 starts, most ever for Michigan offensive linemen. That holds weight with me. You talked about Billy Price. Billy Price, 55 starts. Just 1 year at center, but a bunch at guard. You know, and James Daniels, you know, here's a guy that, you know, the thing about him, Dan, is he turns 20 in September. So you wonder about his youth and his strength a little bit. You know, any one of those three, I'd be okay with. In my mind, Dan, the thing is, depending on where the run occurs and at what position the run takes place, I could see a run happening for offensive linemen from 20 to 30. Do the Bengals want to be at the precipice of it, start it? Or do they want to say, roll the dice and see what's there at 46? Maybe one offensive tackle selected, and maybe one interior lineman and not even a center is selected. And there you are at 21. And you might think, I still have three up there, 46. I'm going to roll the dice, like they did with Andy Dalton. Instead of moving back up, they sat and they got Andy Dalton in the second round as a quarterback. And they were thinking about moving up earlier in the second round to get him. Do you do that with one of the centers? Because I think they'd be happy, you know, with any of those three. But again, you have to evaluate, is that a bigger need than getting another tackle? Is that a bigger need than this guy that dropped from the top 15 to us at 21? So it's going to be very interesting to make a determination. And it's not going to be unanimous. It's going to be a split decision. It's not even going to be unanimous, I think, whether it should be tackle or center. I bet you're going to have, you know, conflicting opinions on that. But the thing is, whoever you take in that first round in the offensive line, you lock them up for 5 years, not just four. So if you draft
if you want to, you get an option year.
Fifth year. So you could have a day one starter for potentially 5 years.
At low money.
Right, but you look at it. Russell Bodine was a fourth round pick. Started every game for 4 years. Now he's in Buffalo. They didn't have the option for that fifth year. But if you take a center at 21 or a tackle, whatever, you're going to have that guy for four and maybe that if you exercise the option that fifth year. So, you know, that's, I think, a little bit of a consideration as well. But, you know, this draft, this is a great year, Dan, to have multiple third and fifth round picks, because that is where there's a ton of defensive players. That's where there's still some good offensive linemen, is three to five. And to have multiple selections, two threes, a four, two fives, I think it's going to hit him very, very well. And everybody's so concerned about the first round pick. And it's, you know, obviously it's very important, but your draft is the whole body of work. And I think the Bengals have made hay and put their bat on the ball in a lot of rounds over the years in the draft. And I think they could in this one as well, with multiple picks in the third and fifth round. They could double down on one position group in each round. And, you know, as I was looking at it, Dan, you know, I'm thinking, all right, quite possibly they may not draft a quarterback, a running back, wide receiver. They could pick two offensive linemen. They could pick a couple of safeties. They could pick a couple of cornerbacks. They could pick a couple of linebackers. That's only eight selections. They got 11. You know, and the seventh round picks, everybody's like, maybe trade the 3/7 to somebody and get a 6 next year, get better value. Well, the seventh round selections, you're targeting – look what the Bengals have done with college free agents over the years. Now it's like instead of competing with other teams, you've got that guy as a seventh round selection. And you can do it three times before you have to go out there and now compete with other organizations to get bodies. So, hey, there's some value there. And that's why those compensatory picks are important to the team. And that's where I think the Bengals are going to make a lot of hay, third to fifth round. I really do.
Let's talk about the process leading up to the first pick, 21st overall. The Bengals will literally write down their top 21 guys in order on their board so that as each pick is made before they go, they just cross the guy out. So the Browns pick whatever quarterback they're going to pick, they might cross that name out, assuming that he's on their top 21 board. And then when their pick comes around, they see all the names that are still left. And in recent years, when they've picked in roughly this spot, Tyler Eifert immediately comes to mind. He was in the top 10 on their board. They got him. Darquez Dennard was in the top 10 on their board, I believe. They got him. Right. So the same thing is likely to happen again, especially because of the number of quarterbacks that are likely to be picked. They'll have this list, 1 through 21, but the guy they select will be closer to number 10 than number 20.
And number 10 on their list.
Right.
Because on another organization's list, it might be 27. That guy might be 26, 27. That's why you hear so many teams after the draft, we had this guy rated in the top half of the first round, and he fell to us in the third. A lot of other teams might have him as a late two, and he fell in the third. So, again, the board that the Bengals set, the top 21, the top 50, the top 100, whatever it is, and I think they go about 100, and then they'll start crossing names off. There's not an identical board in the National Football League with any other team. May be very similar to others. There may be a consensus on quite a few of the picks, but based on what you do schematically, 3-4-4-3 defense, your boards are totally different. You have to have four linebackers in your starting lineup as opposed to three, four down linemen as opposed to three, depending on your schematic. Now, and everybody's looking for nickel players, so you know a lot of those guys may have pretty equivalent grades around the league. You know, who's the best nickel corner? Who's the best edge rush guy for your nickel package, your sub packages? But there would not be, if you took a snapshot of 32 boards before the draft, there's not one of them that would have a consensus of a top 20. An identical, I should say, top 20. There may be a good majority of common names, particularly top 10. And again, Dan, just because they're picked doesn't mean they're going to work out. It's 50-50. First-round picks, 50-50. It's 50%. You go pick a 2015. You look at the top 10 draft picks in 2015. I bet five hit it and five didn't. So, you know, it's not an exact science. That's the beauty of this whole thing. That's why it gets everybody so intrigued and so fired up, because you can have a myriad of opinions. And all of them, hey, until you evaluate it 3 years down the road, you know, you talked about Oboihe and Fisher. They addressed this tackle problem 3 years ago. Didn't pan out.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, first and second round picks didn't pan out. They've had a lot of success stories, you know, and then you have some blips. But, you know, Dan, if I'm an offensive lineman on this football team, it's like I'm getting my career started again. It's just like going to another organization, because Frank Pollock and Paul Alexander could not be more diametrically opposed, personality-wise, technique, scheme. I mean, they're totally different. So you're in a new room, and you got new players. You got a lot of new guys. You can have more new guys. It is. It's literally like you went to another organization, and everybody starts at the bottom, square one. You know, I mean, yeah, there might be a couple of exceptions here and there, but everybody's battling for a job. So to me, that's a really good dynamic. Everybody's starting in the same spot with a different guy, all that newness, all that freshness. You know, we may see a different Cedric Oboehi that Frank Pollock coaches. We may see a different Jake Fisher that Frank Pollock coaches, because these guys are athletic with footwork. That the only thing with Cedric that I'm worried about is, I hope Frank is part psychiatrist and psychologist football-wise too, because there's no question his confidence has to have taken a hit. So can he rebuild that? Because there's no question in my mind he has physical abilities to play in the league. But there have been a lot of guys that have physical abilities to play in the league that don't make it. So Frank's going to have to get between his ears, you know, the mental part of the game as well as the physical part of the game. And, you know, it might be too soon to give up on Cedric Oboehi. And you can never have enough good offensive linemen, particularly tackles.
Let's talk about one more position of, I'm going to say position of need, even though they've got two returning guys that have played a lot of decent football, George Iloka and Sean Williams. But it's become apparent that the Bengals would like to add more of a ball hawk to the safety position. They talked to Kurt Coleman in free agency. He wound up signing elsewhere. They've talked to Eric Reed. I suppose that's still a possibility after the draft. But in any case, that is a spot that they would like to add somebody with different traits than the two guys that they have.
Yeah, there's no doubt. There's no question about it. And I wonder if Eric Reed has hurt Justin Reed's chances here or elsewhere. His brother's a safety, a good one at Stanford. You know, who knows? I don't know what, there'll probably be some owners that say, you know what? One of the first questions I'm sure he's going to be, or has been asked when he's made his visits, do you have the same beliefs as your brother Eric? I mean, that's probably the first question every single organization has asked this kid. So that's going to be an interesting dynamic as just an aside. But I agree with you. They're looking for somebody that, you know, you can coach a lot of things, Dan. One thing that's very hard to coach, you can't drill a hole in a guy's head and pour instincts in there. And guys that have a nose for the football just have great football instincts. David Fulcher had unbelievable football instincts. I remember saying to him in post-game locker room shows over the years, what made you do that? I really don't know. I mean, he just felt it, saw it, did it. Mm-hmm. That's not stuff you coach. He can't even explain it, you know. And Troy Polamalu, same thing. Dick LeBeau had Fulcher, Polamalu. When he sees guys like that, he just gets out of their way and says to the other safety, look, you have to, whatever he's doing, you want to make sure you cover him. usually he's guessing right more than he's guessing wrong. So, I mean, those are the kind of things you're looking for. And it shows up on tape, guys that have instincts or not, you know, that break on the ball, make plays on the ball. How did he get there? What did he do? How did he do that? And I think a lot of times it's what you coach too. If you're okay with a kid knocking a ball down, deflecting a ball, if that's attaboy, that's what you're going to get. Instead of, don't just knock to catch it. Make a play. It's your football as much as it is his. I'm not good with you just knocking the ball down. Go catch it. Sometimes you get what you coach.
In this draft, you've got Derwin James, a safety from Florida State. You've got Minkah Fitzpatrick from Alabama. I think most of the mock drafts indicate that those guys will be gone before the Bengals select at 21. But you never know. And if either or both is still there, how tempted would the Bengals be?
Boom. I think they jump. Yeah, I think they do. I think they run that card up there as fast as they possibly can. Cornerback, too. Everybody's going to be like, you know, I mean, if for some reason Ward is there from Ohio State, are you kidding me? They'd sprint. So I think, though, corner from the end of the second round on, I think is open game, any round for the Bengals to take a corner. So everybody that does these mock drafts, all the way through the draft, it's just, I guess it's a great exercise, but it's so foolhardy. There's no way anybody can know anything. But I guess you're just making a declaration. This is the range that you feel this football player falls in. And some people, you know, the Bengals may, like we talked about earlier in the podcast here, you know, somebody may have a 2C, late second round grade on a guy. You know, the Bengals have a, you know, 3B on him, and he's still there at 3B, and they take him. you know, the team that had him at a two seed didn't pull the trigger, and others didn't as well. So now the Bengals were more accurate, I think, in their assessment than the one guy that had him at 2C, and vice versa. But again, Dan, it depends on, you know, what you're running, what your coaches are looking for in players, how they're going to fit your system, your scheme, your organization.
Last thing for this podcast, and again, we plan to do another one next week where we will get your pick, the 21st overall pick. We'll make you do your prediction. But last thing for this one is the quarterback position. A.J. McCarron's gone. They signed Matt Barkley to potentially be Andy Dalton's backup. Jeff Driscoll is still around. But Lamar Jackson was here on Monday. When the Bengals were working out, he comes walking through the locker room, which was really interesting.
Right.
How high will the Bengals consider drafting a quarterback? What do you think?
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, I know that, you know, you say, due diligence, but you only get 30 visits. You know, you get 60 at the combine and 30 at your specific mm-hmm. site, your location of your franchise. So, you know, the fact that he came, it's an easy trip, drive up from Louisville, but maybe he wasn't in Louisville. Maybe he was wherever. But the fact remains, you're doing something with him in terms of trying to find out more information. Maybe you didn't get everything you needed if, in fact, you had him at the combine. Maybe you didn't have him at the combine and you wanted to make sure that you find out how much football knowledge does he really have. I mean, can he be, in my opinion, with him, it's like he'd be a great fit with Deshaun Watson because they'd be running the same kind of offense. But, you know, with, I don't know, Matt Ryan, you'd have to have two offenses. You'd have to have a totally different scheme if, in fact, he were to play the quarterback position for you. So I think he would almost have to be, you know, like the guy. And I'll tell you, you know, he's one of those kind of guys, geez, do I really want him to play quarterback? And then he's playing against you. I don't want to defend him, mm-hmm. you know, playing quarterback. He's one of those kind of guys with that rare athletic ability. But, you know, I obviously they're thinking that if he does not go in the first round and he's there and he slides, you know, boy, we've got him – here on our board from his football abilities with our other needs, you know, is there a fit and how close are some of these other guys to him on our board, wherever we have him located. And they just wanted to make sure they dotted the I's and crossed the T's.
Draft podcast number one in the books. We look forward to getting your pick next week.
Ooh, baby.
That's going to do it for this edition of the podcast. Don't forget, in our next podcast, just before the draft, we'll give you our picks for who the Bengals will take before the draft begins on Thursday night, April 26th. And if you haven't done so already, don't forget to subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play, and give it a rating or leave a comment. Your feedback has been very helpful, and 5-star ratings help more Bengals fans find this podcast. I'm Dan Hoard. Thanks for listening to the Bengals Booth Podcast.